When we were last together, we saw God give a supernatural victory over the invading forces coming against Jehoshaphat and Jerusalem. This would have been the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Muites, people who were near Mount Seir. That victory came because of all of the trust, all of the faith that Jehoshaphat and the people of Judah put into He Who Is. The next thing that we read in the story is another little blip in the personality of Jehoshaphat, something that gets him in trouble with God. For the most part, he is a man after God's own heart. He is a righteous man. He does the right thing in his own life, and he insists on the right thing in everybody else's lives. But from time to time, something drives him to try to work things out with the northern kingdom. You remember he'd married his son to the princess of the northern kingdom. That was a problem. He'd also agreed to go with King Ahab against the Syrian forces at Ramoth-Gilead, and that almost got Jehoshaphat killed, but he did get chewed out over that, specifically because, why are you loving those that hate me? Why are you making agreements, treaties with those that have no faith? And so that was the times that we've seen this flaw in his personality, where he's trying to patch things up with the northern kingdom. Well, here it comes again. 2 Chronicles 20, verse 35. After this, and that would have been the victory that we just saw, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, joined with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who acted wickedly. Now, that's the new king after Ahab. And he's only going to be on the throne for two calendar years, actually part of two calendar years. And during that time, Jehoshaphat agrees to enter into some sort of shipping alliance with him. Verse 36, he joined him in building ships to go to Tarshish, and they built the ships in Ezion-Geber. Now, Ezion-Geber is on the north end of the Gulf of Aqaba, due south from the sea, the Dead Sea. Now, Tarshish, usually when we think about Tarshish in the Old Testament, or even in the New Testament, we think about far western Spain, outside the Pillars of Hercules, at the end of the Mediterranean. That cannot be the Tarshish here, because you would not sail out of the Gulf of Aqaba to go to Spain. You would sail probably out of Joppa or some other coastal place in Israel. So this Tarshish may in fact be another Tarshish that's suspected to be on the Indian subcontinent. And you might remember back at the time of Solomon, when we were studying him, we talked about how he had this trading shipping arrangement that for 3 years at a time, they would go out and trade Israeli goods for foreign goods and then come back. And they shipped out of Ezion-Geber, and the things that they brought back indicated that they'd either gone to Southeast Africa or the Indian subcontinent. And I think that the Indian subcontinent is probably where this shipping fleet was scheduled to go, and it might have been based on the things that Solomon had been doing roughly 90 years earlier. Well, Eliezer, the son of Dodavahu of Merisha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat. So here we have another named prophet who comes to chew out Jehoshaphat on behalf of God. Let's listen to what he says. He says, because you've joined with Ahaziah, he who is will destroy what you've made. And the ships were wrecked and were not able to go to Tarshish. So the shipbuilding that was happening at Ezion-Geber is destroyed in some sort of natural disaster, shall we call it? But it's clearly God doing it. Maybe some sort of really bad storm that comes in. Possibly some sort of earthquake comes in. But something happens that destroys all of these ships that were being built. And so the project never got off the ground. That allows us then to talk about how Ahaziah dies. So he tries to have some sort of shipping compact with Jehoshaphat. That gets knocked in the head by God. And then Ahaziah dies. Here's that story from 1 Kings, chapter number 1, verse number 2. Now, Ahaziah fell through the lattice in his upper chamber in Samaria and lay sick. Now, the lattice that we're talking about here is what pretty much amounted to like a screen, a window screen for that time period. In fact, it may have been some sort of fine mesh that was put on these windows, very much like a screen. And somehow he manages to fall through it. And it's an upper chamber, so he falls a story or two down and apparently breaks himself up pretty badly. So he is very ill. He doesn't realize it yet, but he's mortally wounded. So he sent messengers saying to them, go, inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, whether I shall recover from this sickness. Now, we've talked about the idea that Baal was the name for the thunder and lightning god that the peoples of the Middle East worshipped during this period in ancient history. And he had a lot of different names attached to him. And one of them was this idea of the flying Baal, the one that is exalted in the sky, because he was a sky god. The Israelis made fun of that. They talked about him being the flitting around Baal, which was kind of a reference to the flitting of a fly on a manure pile. So instead of being the god of the sky, he was the god of the dung pile. That was the way they made fun of him. Well, Beelzebub, the god of Ekron, was apparently known in the region as a place to go to get healing. That's what the pagans believe. That's what probably the Philistines, because Ekron is one of the Philistine cities. This is what these groups believed, is if you go to that particular idol, that particular little temple devoted to Baal, you can get healed. So this paganized king of northern Israel who believes in the power of Baal sends some messengers to that particular place to try to get over this injury. Verse 3, but the angel of He Who Is said to Elijah the Tishbite, which we haven't heard from him lately. He's the big name prophet of this time period in the divided kingdom. And his area of work is the northern kingdom. So God sends an angel to Elijah and reactivates him. Arise, go up to meet the messengers of the king of Samaria and say to them, is it because there is no God in Israel that you're going to inquire Beelzebub, the god of Ekron? Now therefore, thus says He Who Is, you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die. So Elijah went. So God intervenes to make it very clear to not just Ahaziah, because he's going to be gone out of here in just a matter of days, but to the survivors who are privy to this message, that Baal can't help you. Baal is a wannabe, a fallen angel pretending to be something more than he really is. Perhaps even Satan is the power behind the Baal story. But he is not the true and living God. He is not the creator of the universe. He is not the one that can actually heal you when you fall through a window screen of an upper story. And so this king should have appealed to the true God rather than a fake one. So Elijah goes and delivers the message. So the messengers return to the king, and he said to them, "Why have you returned?" You see, from Samaria to Ekron, it's at least a day's travel. And from Ekron back to Samaria would be another day. So he should not have heard from these messengers for a couple of days. And yet they're back, evidently on the same day he sent them. So what are you doing? How come you're here? And they said to him, "There came a man to meet us and said to us, 'Go back to the king who sent you and say to him, thus says he who is it because there's no God in Israel that you are sending to inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron? Therefore you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die.'" So exactly as God delivered the message. So he said to them, "What kind of man was he who came to meet you and told you these things?" And they answered him, "He wore a garment of hair with a belt of leather about his waist." Now, when we who are New Testament believers, people who are much more familiar, more than likely, with the New Testament stories, hear that description, we probably think about John the Immerser, John the Baptist, running around in a garment woven from camel hair and with a simple leather waist, holding it nice up and tight against his waist. But this is actually the description of what Elijah looked like when he was doing his ministry. And that's interesting that there is a correlation, some sort of connection between the ministry of Elijah and the ministry of John. Now, why do these guys not know this famous prophet? Well, like I said, Elijah's kind of been kind of out of the picture for a little while. We haven't heard from him lately. And these messengers are more than likely young people that have not had a personal contact with this great prophet of Israel. And so he immediately recognizes who they're talking about. He said, "It's Elisha the Tishbite." And then the king sent to him a captain of 50 men with his 50. So he wants to arrest Elijah and bring him before him and do something about this bad message. So the first captain with his 50 soldiers, they came up to Elijah, who was sitting on the top of a hill, apparently not too terribly far from the capital city. And they said to him, "Oh, man of God, the king says, come down. So get yourself down here and be arrested." But Elijah answered the captain of 50, "If I am a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. And fire came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. Now, does that sound familiar to us with Elijah? Yes, he was the one that prayed and the fire came down from heaven on Mount Carmel and burned up not just the sacrifice that had been soaked and the wood, but also the stones, and burned up the dust, and it evaporated all the water that had been poured over the sacrifice and had puddled in a trench around it. So as I say, when he prayed and God answered, there was nothing left but a smoking hole in the ground. Well, Elijah prays again, and there's nothing left of these 50 guys and their captain. A messenger apparently takes that information back to the king. Verse 11, again, the king sent to him another captain of 50 men with his 50. And he answered and said to him, "Oh, man of God, if this is the king's order, come down quickly." But Elijah answered them, "If I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven, consume you and your 50. And then the fire of God came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. And so another 50 gone. So that's 100 soldiers and two captains gone because they did not show respect for God's prophet. Well, the third guy learned from that. Verse 13, again, the king sent the captain of a third 50 with his 50. The third captain of 50 went up. He came down and fell on his knees before Elijah and entreated him. "Oh, man of God, please let my life and the life of these 50 servants of yours be precious in your sight. Behold, fire came down from heaven and consumed the two former captains of 50 men with their 50s. But now let my life be precious in your sight." So he comes and says, "I beg you, don't have God destroy us too. I'm just here to ask you, request of you, come visit with the king. He would like to talk to you, please." Totally different attitude. And therefore, it brings about a totally different response. Verse 15, then the angel of He Who Is said to Elijah, "Go down with him. Don't be afraid of him." So he arose and he went down with him to the king. And he said to him, "Thus says He Who Is, because you've sent messengers to inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron, Is it because there's no God in Israel to inquire of his word? Therefore, you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die." Now, that's the exact same message that he already sent to this king. But the king wanted to talk to him personally. He actually wanted to have him executed, but he didn't get the chance because of God's intervention. So Elijah delivers the message verbatim one last time, and verse 17 happens. So he died according to the word of He Who Is that Elijah had spoken. Jehoram became king in his place in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because Ahaziah had no son. Now, Jehoshaphat is still on the throne at this time. He has not yet died. But Jehoram, his son, has been promoted to kind of like assistant king or crown prince. So the chronologers from this time period start counting his reign from the time that he was made crown prince. And so here we have him mentioned in the dating of the ascension of this new king, Jehoram. So now we've got two Jehorams in the picture, and we'll have to make sure we distinguish between the two of them. And they are actually tied by marriage, because Jehoram is the brother-in-law, that is, Jehoram of northern Israel, is the brother-in-law of the Jehoram of southern Judah because the sister is married to the king of southern Judah. That would be Athaliah is both sister and queen eventually in southern Judah, but sister to the guy in the northern kingdom. Now, the rest of the acts of Ahaziah that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So this was kind of the last big thing that we hear about Elijah until this next story, when God takes him away from this time period, from this earth, and shoots him to a place of his own choosing, which I'm going to give you my opinion here, and that's all it's worth, folks. I I am of the opinion that one of the two witnesses in the book of Revelation, which takes place during the 3.5 year period right before the second coming of Jesus, I am of the opinion that one of those two witnesses is Elijah, and that he basically leaves here in this time and in this place in our story and is catapulted forward into time, past where we're at right now in our own history, to the events of the book of Revelation. And for him, I think it's an instantaneous thing. It's just a continuation of his ministry. That's my opinion. The Jewish people of the period between the Old Testament and the Gospels held a similar belief. They believe that Elijah the prophet had been reserved as a forerunner to the coming of the Messiah, and that he was going to appear again suddenly right before Messiah shows up. And that's why in the New Testament Gospels, several of the people thought that John the Immerser might be Elijah back from the whirlwind, back from God's hiding him away for a while. We'll talk more about that later in our studies in the Scripture, if God gives us the ability. But for now, let's talk about his departure. 2 Kings, chapter number 2, verse number 1. Now, when he who is was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Now, this Gilgal is the one up in the hill country of Israel. It's not very far from Bethel. And so we've got to make that distinction here. So they are up in the interior part of northern Israel when Elijah says to Elisha, "Please stay here, for he who is has sent me as far as Bethel." So Elijah says, Elijah says to Elisha, "You just stick around here in Gilgal. I'm going to go on to Bethel." But Elisha said to him, "As he who is lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. Then the sons of the prophets who were in Bethel came to Elisha and said to him, "Do you know that today he who is will take away your master from over you?" And he said, "Yes, I know. Keep quiet." So this is where we're now clued in, that there's word out there in the prophetic world. The prophets are all being given insights that Elijah is about to leave their presence and go away. God's going to take him away. He's not going to die. That's not what they're being told, just that he's going to be taken away. When the prophets at Bethel tell Elisha this, he says, "I know that. Let's not talk about it." Verse number 4. Elijah said to him, "Elisha, please stay here, for he who is has sent me to Jericho." But he said, "As he who is lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they came to Jericho. Now, it's less than a day's walk, because it's all downhill, that helps, from Bethel down to Jericho. And so he tries to get him to stay in Bethel, but he says, "No, I'm not going to do it. I'm sticking by you." Verse number 5. The sons of the prophets who were at Jericho. Now, sons of the prophets, that's a term for those who are prophets, who are functioning as God's representatives, particularly in the northern kingdom during this time. And they are in communities. And so the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho, they drew near to Elisha and they said to him, "Do you know that today he who is will take away your master from over you?" And he answered, "Yes, I know it. Keep quiet." So same thing again. "Yes, I'm aware of that. I know that this is being broadcast out there in the spirit world, but let's not talk about it." Elijah said to him, "Please stay here, for he who is has sent me to the Jordan." Now, the Jordan River is about, I think it's another 6 miles east from the city of Jericho. So a couple more hours walk. And he tries to get Elisha to just stay with the school of prophets at Jericho. But he said back to him, as he who is lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So the two of them went on. 50 men of the sons of the prophets also went, and they stood at some distance from them as they were both standing by the Jordan. Now, I have been by this area, probably within, certainly within a mile, and I'm guessing within probably a much smaller portion of that, of the site where this all had to take place. It ends up becoming a traditional site for the crossing of Israel and these events and of the immersion of Jesus by John the Immerser. And it's been marked and church buildings have been built there and all that. So it's a very exciting place to be when you think about these stories. So there are 50 prophets witnessing what's about to happen next. And since we're running out of time, it's going to end up being a bit of a cliffhanger here. But this is what they saw. Verse 8, Elijah took his cloak, so his outer garment, and he rolled it up. Now, this outer garment would have had a purple fringe or prominence on it that's supposed to remind Elijah in particular that he's a person of the covenant. This is also the mantle that he'd thrown around the shoulders of Elisha when they first met, telling him, you're going to be my protege. You're going to be the guy that replaces me. So he rolls this bit of clothing up, and he struck the water with it. And the water was parted to one side and to the other till the two of them could go over on dry ground. So we have the exact reverse of what happened with the Israelis when they first entered the Promised Land about 550 years earlier. They're going to go from the Promised Land over to the other side of the Jordan. And what happens next is historical.